Russian composer Sergei Prokofiev created one of the most famous ballet scores of all time. That's from Romeo and Juliet, which premiered in 1938 after Prokofiev, who left Russia after the revolution, went back to what had become the Soviet Union. Just one thing that made him unusual, another, as a boy he loved stilts. And this section from Romeo and Juliet, Dance of the Night. Both the walk-on for Iron Maiden and the theme for The Apprentice in the UK, the most classical music-sounding example of men fighting. And of course, we learn all this from classical music columnist Fran Hoffner, who takes a slightly different view of classical music in her column for The All. She joins us now. And Fran, we also learn from you that this is Prokofiev Month, or did you just make that up?
I've made it up. Oh. It's my personal holiday.
Because why? You're reading a book.
I am. I'm working my way through Harlow Robinson's Sergei Prokofiev biography right now.
Okay. Well, tell us why you love him so much. And especially, I think you wrote last year, this time of year, everybody wants to hear something about the Nutcracker. And you say, you know, you'll be fine. We're not going to do that. We're going to do Romeo and Juliet because it's a blast. Why?
Oh, it's so much fun. And this is a piece that I played when I was in college. And a lot of my past college and high school pieces are maybe a point of trauma. But this was one I just loved. And it had that perfect intersection of sounding a little old-fashioned, but also modern and crazy, and has such colorful percussion, which is what I played.
Right.
So I have such a fondness for it.
You get to play the tambourine. We'll discuss in a moment. But first, Who's Prokofiev? You write kind of always unhappy, overshadowed by other Russian composers like Rachmaninoff and Stravinsky. Who was he?
He was an early 20th century Russian composer and pianist. And for the first part of his career was really just known as a pianist and could never really break through ahead of Rachmaninoff or Rimsky-Korsakov or Stravinsky because he was always sort of just a little younger, a little in the shadows compared to them.
Okay, well, something of a child prodigy. Had already composed two operas by the time he entered the St. Petersburg Conservatory at 13. His Toccata for Piano from 1912, one of his earliest well-known works. Let's listen. Someone here just said that it's a little like Billy Joel, moving on, but it's hard to play, and you're right, what a weird and wonderful piece of music, almost like the soundtrack of someone tearing apart their room trying to find a pair of keys.
Yeah, there's so much frustration in it, and it really speaks to, I think, the youth that he had at this time. It's sort of bursting out of him through that main D note on the piano, and it's like he's rushing to prove something. It's moving so quickly.
You know, and how does it fit into, you know, where would it be? Pre-revolutionary Russia.
He's still kind of drawing on Stravinsky and this kind of dissonance that is spreading throughout modern Russian classical music.
Yeah. So he was given permission to leave after the 1917 Russian Revolution. He was considered a musical revolutionary, so revolution officials let him travel, went to the U.S., only stayed for 2 years. Why such a short time?
He did not have a great time in the U.S. Unlike Dvorak, he wasn't really trying to discover anything in America. He was really just trying to make money and compose more. And Americans really did see him mostly only as a pianist and not so much a composer. He just wanted so much attention all the time. And I think he couldn't get it in America.
So back to Russia. Well, Stravinsky was here. And so that's a problem. He goes back to Russia in 1936. In 1938, when he was 47, he was commissioned by the Kirov Ballet to compose Romeo and Juliet. Let's listen to Juliet's theme. talk more about Romeo and Juliet.
I just absolutely love this ballet, and I think it brings in some of the texture of Prokofiev's early work that you see in the Toccata, but also blends it with an almost cinematic feel. Mm. They were trying to legitimize ballet more in the first half of the 20th century, so it wasn't such a like frivolous kind of nutcracker-esque type of art, but something like really serious that had dramatic weight to it, and I think this ballet sort of reflects that step up.
Now we're hearing the tambourine in the background there. That is what you played in school when this was performed.
Yeah, during this part I played auxiliary percussion, and I was lucky enough to be the tambourine player for this particular movement.
Because why? I mean, it's just the tambourine, but why?
The percussion is the backbone of this entire piece, at least. The snare and the tambourine and the triangle really maintain an almost like militaristic rhythm throughout this dance.
You said you felt like a profound, well, you often lace profanities through your column, but you felt kind of dumb. Doing it, but it works.
It does. The tambourine's an instrument that I have a lot of animosity towards because I think it's hard. You have to have a lot of confidence, I think, to be a tambourine player that I maybe don't have.
Oh, well, we learned something there. well, let's listen to a little of Mercutio's theme. This is when, you know, the main guy's best friend, as you write, enters the scene. So here we have some xylophone, and if this isn't Enter Best Friend music, I don't know what is. Tell us more about this.
I love how upbeat and kooky and jaunty it is. It's almost a little funny, too, and I think it really captures the playfulness of Mercutio, the character, and brings a lot of life back into that story.
Yeah. Well, and it helps you make your bed faster this weekend.
Yeah, that's true.
Pick the case. Prokofiev was attacked for producing music that rejected classicism. Soviet officials labeled his music anti-democratic formalism and a danger to the Soviet people. What a fate.
Yeah, he really ended his career in a bit of a lull,
I'll say.
Yeah.
But why should we seek him out? Why should we listen to more?
Prokofiev exists right on the cusp of the Russian Revolution. He really came of age during it. And while he always admitted he didn't really care about politics or didn't want to get involved, I think the push and pull between times and schools of thought really impacted his music nonetheless. So it's really interesting to hear a transitionary voice. Yeah. In Russian classical music.
And a relatively recent one. He died in 1953, the same day as Joseph Stalin. So he gets overshadowed again.
Yeah, they had to wait to announce his death. Poor guy.
Poor guy. Well, we give him his due now. Let's go out with a balcony scene music from Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet. Fran Hofner has declared this Prokofiev month, and she writes the classical music column for The All. By the way, what book are you reading? And it's a big one, so that's why you've declared it Prokofiev month.
It is a big one. It's Harlow Robinson's 1987 biography.
Okay. Fran, thanks as always.
Thank you.